This is not a Bristol Con Fringe podcast. It's an extract from the launch of the Fight Like a Girl anthology, which is edited by our very own Joanne Hall and Ros Clark.
Alrighty. So Joe asked me to do a panel and to interview some of the contributors to this very fine book that you're all going to buy today. And probably the best way to start is to actually ask these people to introduce themselves so that you all know who they are. So we shall start with Dolly.
Hi, I'm Dolly Garland. I now live in London, but I am very Bristol Con crowd, that's why I'm here.
Hi, I'm Gay Sebold. I'm a fantasy writer, and I'm here because I get into conversations on Twitter.
I'm Jo, I'm a fantasy writer, I do Bristol Con, I'm one of the editors of this fine anthology that we're here launching, and I'm also here because I get into conversations.
Yes, and Katie.
Yeah, Katie Davis, I write stuff. I also ghostwrite, just saying, just throwing it out there, if anybody has any work. And it was the Twitter conversation when I probably should have been writing that I got involved in.
So three of you have already answered my first question. How the heck did you get into this? It was a conversation on Twitter, obviously. Danny is responsible, we all know that. But Danny is responsible for most things around here. Apparently. So it was a conversation on Twitter. What was the conversation about? We know who started it, but how did it run through? And can you?
I actually have a copy of the very tweet. I went back and found it. Would you like to hear the tweet?
Certainly, yes.
So, who's up for creating an anthology of female SFF writers who write kick-ass combat? Who's up for writing for one? It would be fun! Exclamation mark.
And here we are proving that it was fun, and is still fun, which is a good thing. But did all of you get in on that conversation immediately, or did it take a while for you to find the place?
I was pretty much, because I live on Twitter when I should be writing, so I was pretty much there from the beginning. But it had come from preceding conversations about why aren't there enough women represented in SFF, why aren't there enough women represented in anthologies, and it had emerged from an ongoing conversation that not only me, but Danny and Juliet and all manner of other women had been having over the preceding month about how annoying it was and what were we going to do about it.
Right, yes. Which is actually question two as to why you wanted to get involved. Joe has kicked us off on that. Katie, do you have anything to add to that process?
It's not just a monthly conversation. It's years and years and years of very talented fantasy writers who are sitting in the audience around here writing really, really good fantasy, and then people going, there just aren't enough women writing fantasy with kick-ass female characters. And you can hear the heads banging against desks because they're just not seen. You know, it's that invisibility thing again. And it really annoys me. It irks me. I get quite irked by this. So any opportunity, really, to you know, getting on the drum banging is a good one.
Gay, Dolly, are you irked?
I get irked a lot less, but I am irked. Only because I wouldn't use that word. It's weird to say that. A much stronger word would be my choice. But yeah, I actually didn't know about the Twitter conversation until way after. Joe invited me on this anthology, and that's how I found out the backstory. Because I spend way more time on Facebook than Twitter, as a lot of you know. And yeah, that's how I found out. And before I even knew any more details, just by the title and what the book was about, like, yes, of course I would love to participate. Why wouldn't I? And yeah, that was it, because I mean, I grew up in India, and so, you know, women thing is, we still need to work on that. So just moving to US and UK, it felt like, oh, wow, I have rights. And then finding it out after a few years that actually not as many rights as I thought. So I still need some work.
Yeah, irked is only one of many, many words I might use, and frequently and quite loudly. But also, I mean, it's about being angry at lack of visibility, but it's also just because it sounded like a lot of fun. I like writing tough, fighty characters, and it was a chance to actually think a bit more about what that meant. I ended up writing something quite a lot more serious and darker than I expected, because I was thinking about combat and effects of combat and that kind of thing. But so it was really useful in that it made me come at it from a new angle.
Dolly, are there any creative Indian swear words that we could use in order to... Now, it really doesn't matter if we get an explicit tag on iTunes. We do that all the time with Bristol Con Fringe, but there are apparently children in the room.
I would be a bad choice for this, because I just went to India for 2 weeks and I was talking to one of my friends from school, and he had to teach me Indian swear words, because I learned to swear in America, so I only know English swear words. I was too young when I lived in India and pretty a good child, so I didn't do it.
While we're on the subject of India, by the way, I did a blog post earlier this week. I'm muttering mainly about Hugos and stuff, but there was a film I really wanted to nominate for the Hugos, which is about an Indian queen from Tamil Nadu, I believe. Rudra Devi. Yeah, which my Indian is not terribly good, but she was queen of this particular part of India in the 13th century for 40 years. She was actually brought up as a boy by her father, because he was concerned that he'd be in trouble if he didn't have a son. But when she was 14, she claimed the throne, revealed herself to be a woman, and went on from there for 40 years and died in battle against a rebel army. So, totally awesome person. So, I thought we could mention that on this particular day. But Gay's brought up a good point in that, you know, we're not just doing this for the political side. We're doing it because it's actually fun. And I'm just wondering if people thought that they needed permission to write fighty girl characters, or do you do it all the time? Joe, I know, just kills people. So
that's the fun bit.
Does anybody else feel that they needed permission to write fighty girl characters, that this was an excuse?
No.
No. Yeah. Okay. They're all...
Don't need any excuse.
Yes, they're all shaking their heads and saying that they... in terms of the industry, that, you know, the industry has specific things that it wants from women fantasy writers, and no matter how many fighty characters you put in the book, if you come out from a mainstream character, you'll probably have a girl in a ball gown on your cover if you've got a female writer. So is there an issue from that point of view in the needing to get out there and do some fighty characters? Anyone?
I think there are plenty of fighty characters, but I think it's more in the marketing. And like you said, you know, the covers don't reflect often the fightiness of the characters. The display tables on, you know, in big booksellers don't reflect the fightiness of the characters or the fightiness of the authors. There's a perception that women write something that is generally softer and less aggressive, less fighty. And I think sometimes the marketing can kind of tie in to reflect that, oh, you're a woman, so we'll do you a fluffy cover.
I have some friends. I have a friend who's an out-and-out gamergator. I love him a bit, but, you know, we have a different opinion on many things. And he doesn't read books by women that are about war and fighting, because he says, they're not going to be any good, you know? No offence, but they're probably not the kind of thing I want to read. I'm not into touchy-feely stuff. So, and it's kind of borne out by some of these covers that have pouty, beautiful, skinny girls on the front. And I probably wouldn't want to read that myself. I'm trying not to cringe at Gal Gadot being just a little bit thin. The girl doesn't look like she lifts weights or anything. You know, she's not my Wonder Woman. But okay, we'll get over that. So you're already fighting a big percentage of your market if you write fighty, warlike stories. I've wargamed all my life, play with swords, all this kind of thing. I know what of I speak. But it doesn't matter, because if people see me as a woman, a big chunk of the audience I want to write for just isn't going to read it. And that's kind of not helped by the mainstream publishing industry, unless you write under a pseudonym.
It's not just the marketing. I mean, I've been very lucky with the covers that my publisher, Solaris, has given me. They've been really nice, and I've, you know, they've looked like the way I thought of the characters, which is great.
reviews. Well, I've had some lovely reviews. I've also had one which reviewed a book which describes in quite some detail death, torture, gutting somebody on a battlefield, so on and so forth, various unpleasant circumstances, as fun and fluffy.
Right.
And I thought, did you actually read the book I wrote at all? Or is it just because, you know, the viewpoint character is female and occasionally indulges in, shall we say, intimate embraces with various people, that this is obviously like fluffy paranormal fantasy? That one word, fluff, is become something that I think should only be associated with kittens.
I think you're right about the covers, because a lot of urban fantasy that I read, where it's female characters, even if they're kick-ass and they're on the cover, there is almost always a guy with them. Even if he's not the main lead, but there is always. So the element you get is, well, is it fantasy or is it romance? And then as soon as you imagine that it's romance, you think, oh, it's fluffy, or it must be touchy-feely, or it must be softer. So even if you, you know, you have Game of Thrones, there are lots of intimate embraces, but nobody thinks of them as fluffy from any angles. And, you know, same with Joe Abercrombie's books. And yet when it's written by a woman, it's a different perspective. So, yeah, I think there is definitely problem in perception. But, yeah, with anybody... I don't think anybody who's met me has ever said I'm soft and fluffy and not aggressive. In fact, I usually get the other way around. So my marketing tactic would be just basically, you know, talk to me, you'll buy my books.
On the subject of publishing, by the way, I did notice that on Facebook we had a message of good wishes from Jo Fletcher, who is probably the highest ranked female publisher in the genre industry in the UK. So well done, Jo. Thank you very much. Just getting on to my own hobby horse there, because I am a small press publisher after all. This book is coming out from Crystal Ink, and you've talked about Solaris and whatever. Is it a question that the further up the food chain you go, the harder it is to escape from the fluffiness, or at least the presentation of fluffiness?
I was actually writing about this the other day. I think the small press have more, because we're working with POD, we have more scope to take risks. We're not putting that enormous financial investment behind a book that some of the big houses are, because you're not printing off 25, 35, 50,000 copies. You're printing off maybe 50, 100. So the upfront financial risk isn't there, which means that the small press are able to take risks that the bigger presses wouldn't. So, you know, people like Crystal Ink, people like Fox Spirit, people like that can say, right, well, yeah, we're going to put a fighting woman on the cover. We're going to make sure that the author's name is on the cover and they don't have to use a pseudonym. You know, we're not taking that risk that hundreds of people are going to look at it and go, oh, it's by a girl, it's going to be fluffy. You know, so there is that extra level of liberty that you have in the small press to be able to do experimental fun things like this.
I think it does make a big difference because and this is my perception, not experience, is that unless you are a name or recognized for something, then you can get away with a lot of stuff. But until then, you would have to meet certain expectations or somehow or have connections or know things that gets you there, where small presses give opportunities before you get there. So...
Which gives me an opportunity to do a plug. Buy books from small presses. There are plenty on the table in the next room, even some of mine. Thank you very much. Jo.
Something as well that's been really nice with doing this and editing this one and also editing Airship Shape and Bristol Fashion, which is on the table out there, just thought I'd mention it, is that it gives the editors and the publishers a chance to open up their anthologies to new up-and-coming writers who may otherwise struggle to get published by the bigger presses. So it's enabling us to give people a leg up.
Alrighty, so as we are now published, I guess the next thing to do is to ask you all to tell us a little bit about your own stories, how you came to write that particular one, and perhaps, you know, what connection with fighting you had, whether you actually... That was an area of fighting that you had knowledge about or was something you had to research or whatever. So, who would like to start?
So, my story is set in kind of like ancient India. Now, I resisted using Indian mythology for years because I didn't want to, and mainly because I didn't want to be the Indian author. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote Western fantasy, wrote all sorts of different stuff. Then actually my non-fantasy story, which was set in Indian setting, got published on basically a second draft because it just sounded like me, which I didn't know. And then all the people who then read my fantasy set in Indian setting, I got anonymous feedback that this is the best you've done in that it sounds like you. So then I give in and I'm like, fine. And then I started experimenting. And then it kind of clicked in over time that actually, yeah, I have this inherent knowledge of all this mythology and stuff that I grew up with. So why not use it? And this is how this current story came about. That's how it set in. And in my own, you know, rebel fashion, it's not just an Indian woman, but it's a lesbian Indian woman, which is still not accepted in India. So that was, yeah, that was my thing, that it's not just a fighting kick-ass woman, but it's something that is still not accepted. And yeah, that was my stamp on it.
I thought I was going to write something fun and hacky slashy and rah, and I ended up dealing with PTSD and loss and grief, which is something I hadn't really dealt with. I mean, I've had characters who suffer loss, but I hadn't really dealt with the after effects of a very traumatic battle. And I found that I was actually interested in doing that because I think there is a bit of a tendency in a lot of fighty fantasy. Some of the fighty fantasy I personally have read, I'm not saying this goes on in all the other fighty fantasy that I haven't, to sweep over that, to have people stride triumphantly off the battlefield and dash away perhaps a manly tear and make up a poem about, you know, the fallen, and not actually undergo a lot of the real traumatic responses that people do. I mean, I don't know how well I did it, but I think it was good for me to try to do that, and I hope it worked.
Well, I loved it.
Good, thank you.
Katie?
Well, something else. Small publications like this give you a chance to stretch, to try things that are improving your skill, experimenting. So mine's even jollier than Gay's about this. I watched a documentary and it was about a guy who basically went to a seaside place, I think it was Ireland, to kill himself. And he destroyed his own identity. They don't know who he is. And he drowned himself. And they think it was probably because he was dying of something and he wanted his family to get the insurance. But this is a true story. And so they interviewed everybody in this town. And the women, some of the women said, they saw him walking on the beach and it looked like he was walking between the shafts of light on the beach, and you know how it bounces up off of the... And I thought, yeah, and it just sort of triggered an idea about light and memory and the thoughts before a big fight, because you kind of go into a weird space, apparently. And so it was an experiment based on somebody's reflection on the past, based on reflections of... It's probably terrible. I do apologise. It's a skim over in the book if you read it. But... they accepted it, so that was very kind of them. And that's kind of metamorphosed into a story about somebody just at the beginning of a fight and falling off a bridge. There you go.
I thought your story was lovely. I really liked it, actually. Yeah, my story is about a woman cage fighting big lizards, and I do that every week.
You cage fight big lizards every week.
I do it at Bristol Con meetings. You need to come to a meeting.
So you cage fight big lizards once a month?
Every
right. Yeah, a bit of an exaggeration. So yeah, I mean, just coming back to KT's story, I really like the way that you set that in the time before the fight was about to start and all of the troops were, you know, just thinking about what was going to happen. That's something that you don't normally see in this sort of thing. And have you actually got experience of doing into that? Have you done fighting and stuff?
Well, yeah. I mean, other than pubs and stuff in my younger days. no, I do reenactment type. I used to do reenactment type thing. A little bit of messing around with swords and stuff and horses and studying medieval martial arts, because I'm a bit nerdy in that way. So, yeah,
See, that's what I was fishing for. Anybody else want to confess to doing recreational, you know, recreations and stuff? Gay, tell us about the stuff that you did.
Well, I used to belong to the Sealed Knot many, many years ago. So, yes, running around, being a water carrier, because back when I was doing it, they weren't that keen on having women actually in the pike block, but that has changed.
They said that to me. I joined the English Civil War Society, and I turned up to the first one, yeah, the enemy, and they said, oh, all the ladies are over there, and you can do the water carrying. I went, oh, no, I want to fight. So there was me and 20 bikers. It was quite an education. I was 18 at the time, and it was jolly good fun.
I think my most memorable moment was probably getting kidnapped by the Roundhead horse, but and take down the pub, which was actually one of the better parts of the afternoon. But yeah, I used to do that, and I did medieval. Bastard sword with Scholar for a couple of years, which I loved, but it was on the other side of London on a weeknight, and I never got home before midnight, so I gradually dropped out of doing it, which I'm ashamed of, really, because it was fun. And I learned a huge amount. The people running it were total sword and weapon nerds and, you know, knew everything about the way weapons have been used throughout history and all this kind of thing. If you ever had a question about what would happen if you did this, or what sort of weapons did people use at this point, and they were great. And that's how I discovered Sword Forum. If anybody ever wants to do some research, Sword Forum is brilliant. A little bit obsessive on occasion. and I've done IVE Action Roleplay, and that was great. That was brill. I think that was a huge boost to my physical self-confidence, because it was the first time I'd done anything remotely like it. And, you know, apart from running around as a water carrier, which didn't get you into the front line, really, but I played a frontline warrior, and it was huge fun. Mm. And I discovered just how aggressive I really am, I think, as did the opposition.
Yeah. Dolly, Joe, any involvement in reenactment?
I haven't done anything this cool, and I feel real shortcoming in my geekness. The only thing I'm currently doing is mostly shadow boxing and trying out free taekwondo classes all around the place.
Well, that's perfectly cool. Tell us about that.
Boxing I like, and so I'm currently, like, I've done it with personal trainer, and I do it mostly shadow boxing, as Mark knows, because I talk about it on Facebook and I follow his boxing updates. But other than that, yeah, I'm just basically going around attempting to try all these different taekwondo and kickboxing dojos, because I'm kick-ass in personality, not so much physically, and I would like to change that.
Joe?
I'm really lazy. And I like watching people hit each other with swords, and I like gaming hitting people with swords, and I really, you know, Scott was saying, oh, yeah, there's sword fighting at Bradley Stoke, you should totally come. And I was like, I don't know, it's 9 o'clock on a Wednesday evening, I'll be asleep, man. So I have not yet, but I did see a friend of mine get killed 30 seconds into a reenactment at the Berkeley Castle, and he kind of staggered off the field looking very upset at being dead, and I thought, well, sod that for a game of soldiers.
It was indeed a game of soldiers. Yes. I suppose that I should confess that in my time in the Society for Creative Anachronism and the Far Isles, all I ever did was the lady-in-waiting thing, which was terribly boring of me. But when I was a lot younger, I used to do fencing, and I really enjoyed hitting people with a sabre. That was seriously cool. And boxing is cool as well. If you don't want to get in the ring with Mark or anything, and you have a Wii, the boxing game on Wii Fit, yeah, I'm totally kick-ass at that.
I did small bore rifle shooting when I was at college. I shot for Hampshire, and the reason I chose it was because it was indoors and lying down.
Brilliant. Oh dear. Anyway, we should get back to talking about books now. And you know, it's absolutely wonderful that there's this great book that you can all go and buy, and then you can all go and buy books by all of the contributors in it, because they're all really good and they've got lots of other kick-ass stuff. But I thought, well, while we were here, we might talk about one or two other books by women writers? That if people are interested in going out and seeing more of this stuff, who should they actually be reading?
So I really like J.D. Robb's Eve Dallas series. It's actually science fiction lightly because it's set in the near future, but it's crime series following the same detective. And the main character is female called Eve Dallas. And I think it's really, really well-rounded character. Fight scenes accuracy, sometimes good, sometimes not. But yeah, overall, that's kind of the story I read, both for relaxing and also for like really getting in the fighty mood, which is very weird. But yeah, but it's the one series where I buy all the books and there have been like over 25 already. J.D. Robb. So this is actually Nora Roberts' other name. So she, you know, the romance books,
yeah,
which I don't read, but the J.D. Robb. So she writes just this because her publisher said they couldn't possibly publish any more of her books because she writes too fast. So she needed to use another name. And so instead of just using another name and doing more romance, she started doing science fiction crime series. And yeah, it's very different and it's very good.
I'm horribly behind, like about 2 decades behind on my reading, so I can't really do any good current recommendations apart from, you know, all the other people who are in the book. So I'm going to be rather shamefaced and hand the microphone over or back, wherever it's going next.
Books aside, I also read a fair few comics, and Gail Simone is a cracking writer of cracking female characters. So pretty much anything she's written, especially Batgirl, that's a really, really good character and characterization by a really good female writer. And comics are really hard to write as well, so...
So one of my absolute favourites of the last couple of years has been Jem Williams' Black Feather 3 trilogy. That's really hard to say. Copper Promise trilogy. which is just phenomenal, and it's got fights and pirates and stabbing people, and Widrin is just one of the best female characters that I've read in a fantasy novel in the past few years, and you should totally seek it out.
Just a few recommendations from me. You probably all know about Cameron Hurley, but you know, that's in terms of modern kick-ass fighting stuff. That's certainly the best thing to look at. Cameron used to do boxing as well, I believe. So, just going a little bit further back into the past, you should all seek out and read Ash by Mary Gentle, which is absolutely brilliant. Okay, so we have about 6 or 7 minutes left. Has anybody got any questions that they want to ask the panel, that being a traditional panel thing to do? Juliet.
It's not a question, it's another book recommendation. Stella Gemmell,
Juliet has just recommended.
The City is extraordinarily good. And the notion of coming after David Gemmell, with the same surname, with that, you know, all of the expectations that you might have about, and now his wife is writing books, forget them. It is the book has got a very distinct voice, a very distinct take on things, some extremely strong female characters. And this is at the forefront of my mind because I've just bought this next one.
Right. So this then is David Gemmell's wife, Stella, who is now writing fantasy novels, which Juliet tells us are very different from her husband's books, but absolutely well worth reading. Anybody else out there with a question? Pete. Pete is asking if there is going to be a Fight Like a Girl 2, which of course there is, because I haven't had a chance to write for it yet. I kind of missed the boat on this one. However, yesterday on social media, Joe was talking about a book called Battle Like a Bloke. It was, of course, April Fool's Day, but...
Yes, because we felt that straight white men were massively underrepresented in genre and needed a special anthology of their own to make sure that they still felt okay about it. Well, there's actually going to be a Fight Like a Girl 2, we would have to ask Sammy, and it obviously depends how this one goes, so you all have to go out there and buy another copy right now.
Which reminds me, actually, that occasionally straight white men can write kick-ass female characters. I mean, one of my favourites as a kid was Belit, the Queen of the Black Coast from the Conan stories, which is why I wanted to grow up to be a pirate.
Actually, if we are recommending, I would say that Scott Lynch writes some very good kick-ass female characters who are, you know, fully rounded and believable, and really good. And for fighting women, Pratchett's Monstrous Regiment.
Any other questions? Yes, gentleman at the back.
I'm looking forward to reading all the stories in the book, and I fully support what you're trying to do. I found it interesting that, Gail, sorry, you were talking about how your story turned into about PTSD. And doesn't that actually exemplify what you were saying before about men not, or some people not wanting to read touchy-feely stories about PTSD? What they want is to read a story where somebody gets hacked to pieces and there are no consequences whatsoever.
Okay, that was a very good question. The gentleman at the back pointed out that Gail's story veering into PTSD is actually the sort of touchy-feely thing that we were saying that women writers were getting accused of. So weren't we actually playing up to the stereotype there? Gail?
It's gay, by the way. Sorry. People do that all the time. Yeah. Is it playing up to a stereotype? Possibly. Sometimes I want to read stuff which is pure fantasy. I mean, I read a lot of different stuff. I read romance. I read, you know, detective novels. I read all sorts of things. And sometimes I really, really don't want grit, you know. But sometimes I do. Sometimes I want something, even in the light and fluffy stuff, I want something with real heart and real emotions, because if all it is just people leaping about on the rocks, switching their sword from hand to hand and being witty at each other, that's great. But if you don't cry when one of them dies, it's completely pointless. So, yeah, maybe it is a stereotype, but it's one I'm, in that case, quite happy to play up to.
Hey, hand at the back. Okay, the question was, is it not a case of fight like a girl, but rather acknowledge reality like a girl?
I think the answer more is not acknowledge reality like a girl, more like a rational person.
I can't top that.
Actually, I wanted to mention Julia Knight's story, where the central character is actually a bloke. But he does at one point comment that he is fighting like a girl because he's using his head rather than his brawn, which I thought was a really nice take on the whole idea of the story, the anthology theme, rather. There's a hand, yes? Question about Joe Abercrombie's book, which I think I've read. Gay, do you want to...?
Well, I think Joe Abercrombie is very much, well, he is Lord Grimdark, isn't he, if you follow him on Twitter. And he has that kudos, if you like. He's known to write the serious, dark, gritty stuff. It probably helps that he is a chap, so it's easier for him to get acknowledged as writing the grim and dark and gritty and serious stuff. But, yeah, I don't think there is a difference in that he is dealing with serious emotional issues. As you say, he's severely messed up. There are a lot of very messed up people in Mr. Abercrombie's books. And they are having emotional responses. They are having emotional reactions. They are behaving like people. And I think writing people as people is something any halfway decent writer should be doing, whatever their gender, frankly.
Which I think is actually a pretty good comment on which to end the panel. I think we're out of time, aren't we, Russ? Yeah. In which case, thank you very much to Dolly, to Gay, to KT, and to Joe. And thank you, audience.
Fight Like a Girl is published by Grimbold Books, an imprint of Crystal Inc., and is available from good bookstores everywhere. our thanks to the Hatchet Inn in Bristol for providing us with a venue.